Wonderful song service again. It's wonderful to be here on this first day of the week, the Lord's Day, as we remember Him, especially this day and His death and what it means to us. But to come together with brethren of like mind and to lift up our voices in praise to God is truly a blessing. It is a wonderful fellowship that we have, and it's especially nice today because we have so many visitors. This once a year that we are able to have, and this is the second time that I've been able to be a part of it. It's been such an encouragement to me this weekend, and of course we're not finished yet, but we're glad that you are here with us. Appreciate Luke visiting with us this weekend to do the scripture reading for us this morning. Our theme throughout this weekend has been the power to overcome, as we read from 1 John in chapter 5 in verses 4 through 5, where the Apostle John writes, "For whatever is born of God overcomes the world. And this is the victory that has overcome the world, our faith. Who is he who overcomes the world but he who believes that Jesus is the Son of God?" We will spend our entire life fighting this battle of overcoming the world. But in our youth, as we talked about yesterday, our lives are much more pliable and we are easier prey to Satan to conform us by the pressures and the influences of this world, by throwing adversity into your life and doubt and deception. This is a very fragile, crucial time of your life as you are at this precipice, as you decide which way you're going to go, as you make decisions about your faith, decisions about who you will marry, decisions about the friends that may be lifelong friends. All of this comes into play as you think about either overcoming the world or being overcome. It's going to be one or the other. You make the decision, and it is completely up to you. Will you overcome or be overcome? I believe that one of the greatest challenges that I faced in my youth in trying to overcome the world was the challenge that had to do with what we might call this spirit of fear. Paul wrote to Timothy and urged him to stir up the gift that was within him. Apparently what Paul was telling Timothy that he needed to do was to reignite something, that he needed to remember something, that he needed to find that passion and that zeal maybe that had been lost. And that happens to us at times. It certainly has with me. There are times where we go through a rediscovery. We have to go back to maybe our beginning, go back to our roots of Christianity. And as as Jesus said to the church at Ephesus, that they, though they were very sound doctrinally, they had left their first love. Paul said that Timothy needed to stir up that gift that was within him. And I want to tell you that every one of you here, every young person here, to some degree has a gift within you. You have a unique ability. You have the power that works within you that you can do great and special things for the Lord. And you can do them right now. And you can continue to do them. But one of the things that you've got to understand is what Paul went on to write to Timothy in verse 7, where he said, "For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind." Power, love, and a sound mind. All three of those need to be in place. A sound mind is healthy thinking. We talked about that yesterday. Todd brought it up in his first lesson. I brought it up as I talked about peer pressure. As a man thinks in his heart, so is he. Keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. The sound mind is the mind that maintains its health, that thinks on these things, Philippians 4 and verse 8. Love is obviously the bond of perfection that holds it all together in our service to God and to His Son, Jesus Christ. But power. Power is what is lacking in so many Christians' lives. And what Paul is writing about here is a spirit of confidence. It is a spirit of believing that we can do the task that God has set before us. In many cases, believing that we can do what would otherwise be impossible. That we, as God's children, because we are His children, can do the impossible. Because God has done the impossible for the impoverished for years and years throughout the Bible story to show us the power that is within us. It's not our own. It is the Lord's. The failure that we make especially when we're young, and when we make this failure as young people, we carry it into our lives as adults. And it is that spirit of fear. That spirit that we might say is a spirit of inferiority. And it holds us back. It keeps us from being everything that we could possibly be. It certainly keeps us from making a difference in the Lord's kingdom. It keeps us from being the husbands that we ought to be and could be. From being the wives and mothers that you ought to be and could be. From being the children that we ought to be and could be. If we would just tap in to the power that God is supplying. That gift that lies within us. You know, when we think about this problem, I want you to understand that this is a common battle. As I mentioned, this is something that I believe hindered me in my life as a Christian for many, many years, at least until my late 20s. I tell people, you wouldn't recognize me earlier, those who've only known me since I've been preaching, because I was a very passive person for the most part. Maybe passive aggressive. You know, I let people walk on me and then resented it. And that's not the kind of spirit that a Christian ought to have. We are to have a confidence within us that helps us not to be prideful, but to be confident in the Lord. And I lacked that. I had never developed that spirit, and much of that had to do with the fact that I had never really made that commitment early in my life to completely surrender to the Lord and to be His servant and to live for Him rather than unto myself. That's the very foundation we talked about yesterday that will give us this confidence. And it was when I truly had surrendered in my life that I finally found that confidence and that empowerment that I'd never known before in my life and made a difference like I'd never made before in my life. And the sooner that you learn this, the sooner that you start it, the sooner that the Lord's kingdom will flourish by the work that young people can do. There is a place for you in His kingdom. Luke just read to us about Jonathan, a relatively young man that was truly a prince in Israel. What a difference he made. What a tragic loss when he died. Yes, this problem of fear, of inferiority, is a serious problem. You know, inferiority, when we use that word, it is a feeling. It is an exaggerated sense of inadequacy. You know, all of us have certain areas of life that we realize that's not my forte. I'm not the best at that. But an exaggerated sense of inadequacy makes us feel like we can't do anything. I can't try that. I'm not going to get up and do that. If I do this, I might fail. Somebody might laugh at me. Somebody might make fun of me, or I might be cast out. And it is that fear of failure. It is that fear of being judged and looked down upon by others that keeps us from doing some of the greatest things that could change our lives and change things in the Lord's kingdom. And what it does is it fosters this feeling of defeat and of fear that Paul said that we're not to have as Christians. I want to mention this, and that is that there is a difference between humility and inferiority. There is a difference between humility and inferiority. Humility is not a character trait where we constantly demean ourselves and put ourselves down. I've been around Christians, even non-Christians before, that seemed to think that humility was a spirit of constantly putting themselves down and telling people how bad they were. And I want you to realize that while we may not be aware of it, maybe it is a subconscious thing, but when we do that, many times that is merely a pity party that is a ploy to get other people to brag on us. You don't need to do that. There is no one more humble in the history of mankind than the Lord Jesus Christ, and He didn't put Himself down. He simply spoke about the fact that He was the Son of God. He spoke about the fact that He was in submission to His Father. He was not pretentious in His life, but He did not constantly demean Himself. I want to tell you that when we do that, we are not helping ourselves, we're not helping anyone else. I'm not saying that that we need to go to the other extreme and begin to boast or to brag about ourselves. You know, the writer of Proverbs, the wise man, said in Proverbs 30 and verse 8, "Give me neither poverty nor riches." They're two extremes and neither one of them are good. And I would say, give me neither inferiority, neither pride. What we need is confidence. not in ourselves, but in the Lord. We need that assertiveness that we can do all things through Christ as we began this weekend. And so as we think about this spirit of fear, of inferiority, it is an exaggerated sense of inadequacy. Instead of rising up and facing a challenge and gaining confidence, we step back into the shadows and we wait for someone else to do it. And this battle of Jonathan and going and fighting against the garrison of the Philistines is a perfect example, because the people of God, the children of God, were standing back trembling. And nobody would lead the charge. Jonathan went alone with his armor bearer. This is the spirit of power. And I want you to notice the key verse here in 1 Samuel 14, where Jonathan said in verse 6, at the end of that verse, "It may be that the Lord will work for us, for nothing restrains the Lord from saving by many or by few." God has no limitations. And your limitations are no limitations for God. God can work through you and do anything that you need to do. You say, "How do I know what I need to do?" By the opportunity that is before you. When an opportunity is before you, and no one else has that, regardless of what you think of yourself, God has said, "You are capable with me." Jonathan defeated 20 men over a half an acre of land, himself and his armor bearer. That's something that is beyond the pale of normal comparison. But God was with him. Any opportunity that stands before you, at your age, there are some opportunities that will come only to you. Some opportunities that are unique to your age. There are opportunities of evangelism, of spreading the gospel that you have right now that you won't have later in life. People your age are generally open to consider the possibility that they may be wrong, that maybe they were taught wrong, and their minds are open. They see inconsistency in the lives of others or in false religion. This is the greatest opportunity of your life for evangelism. But you've got to seize those opportunities that are out there. You've got to ask that person for a Bible study to come to church with you. Ask them about their faith, about their salvation, and open the Bible and study with them. You know, this spirit of fear we see throughout the Bible, and then we see those exceptions, like Jonathan, that overcame it. We see, for instance, Moses in Exodus chapter 4. In Exodus chapter 4, as God was seeking to send Moses to deliver His people from Egyptian bondage, and I've got to sympathize with Moses, I cannot imagine how insurmountable that task must have seemed to him, shepherding sheep out in the wilderness for his father-in-law. And so in verse 10 of chapter 4, Moses said to the Lord, "O my Lord, I am not eloquent, neither before nor since You have spoken to Your servant." He's saying, "I wasn't good at this before You came to me, and even now that You've given me this charge, I still don't have it. I can't do it. I haven't felt a change come over me." He said, "But I am slow of speech and slow of tongue." In verse 11, the Lord said to him, "Who has made man's mouth? Or who makes the mute, the deaf, the seeing, or the blind? Have not I the Lord? Now therefore go, and I will be with your mouth and teach you what you shall say." God saying, "You can do it with me. I will overcome that challenge. Your limitations are not my limitations," God says. The opportunity is here, and that responsibility follows. In verse 13, Moses said, "Oh my Lord, please send by the hand of whomever else You may send." So the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses. Moses nearly lost an opportunity. Changed the course of his life and probably the course of history. Certainly God would have delivered by the hand of another, but it wouldn't have been Moses. Seize those opportunities. Gideon is another example in the book of Judges. In Judges chapter 6, I want you to notice there with me in verses 14 through 16. As Gideon was overwhelmed with this sense of inadequacy, as God called him again to lead in battle for His people. In Judges chapter 6, beginning there in verse 14, the Bible tells us here about Gideon. In verse 14, the Lord turned to him and said, "Go in this might of yours, and you shall save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have I not sent you?" So he said to him, "O my Lord, how can I save Israel? Indeed, my clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my father's house." And the Lord said to him, "Surely I will be with you, and you shall defeat the Midianites as one man." With God on our side, we are the majority. This spirit of fear is exemplified in the lives of so many, and the spirit of power is exemplified in others. Think with me about Abraham. Abraham in the book of Genesis in chapter 20. We see the spirit of fear moved him to make the wrong decision. And this is going to be one of those examples that we see in our lives at times where we take the weak position. In Genesis chapter 20 and in verse 1, Abraham journeyed from there to the south and dwelt between Kadesh and Shur and stayed in Gerar. And Abraham said of Sarah, his wife, "She is my sister." And Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. Well, of course, God plagued Abimelech. And God revealed to him that she was another man's wife. And so Abimelech, in verse 9, called Abraham and said to him, "What have you done to us? How have I offended you that you've brought on me and my kingdom a great sin? You have done deeds to me that ought not to be done." Abimelech said to Abraham, "What did you have in view that you've done this thing?" In other words, to lie to me about your wife. Verse 11, Abraham said, "Because I thought, surely the fear of God is not in this place. They will kill me on account of my wife. But indeed, she is truly my sister. She is a daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother. And she became my wife." You know, this is an example of a couple of things here. First of all, that deceit is just as wrong as outright lying. And Abraham made this mistake, and we don't need to try to shore up Abraham here. We don't need to make excuses for him and say, well, it's okay, and sometimes it's all right to lie. Let me tell you, it is never right to do the wrong thing. Whether we're looking at the city of Jericho and Rahab the harlot who hid the spies and lied about them, and people have tried to justify that and talk about God's grace, it was wrong. This is just an example of someone who has faith in God, but their faith is still not where it ought to be. There's still that spirit of fear rather than spirit of power, and it doesn't make the lie right. We were in devotional yesterday, and I think Cody semi-jokingly said about Samson that it was probably good for him to lie for a while. And I think he didn't mean that. It's never right to lie. It is a spirit of fear. The spirit of power tells the truth. And this is one of the things that will challenge you as young people, is you will be tempted to lie your way out of something. Instead of owning up to what you've done, to simply confess. You will never prosper in sin until you confess it and tell the truth. You will be tempted to lie to your friends about why you've done something, or lie to your friends and not be willing to own up to the fact that you don't do this because you're a Christian, so you make another excuse. People justify what they call white lies because they do not want to accept the responsibility that follows with telling the truth. That's the spirit of fear. The spirit of power says that God will take care of all things. And even Abraham, the father of faith, struggled with this in his life. And that helps me to understand that I'm not some kind of utter failure when I do this, but what I need to learn from it is that I can do better, that I can learn the spirit of power, that I can rise up. How do we overcome this spirit? How do we overcome inferiority? The one talent man, another example, who hid the one talent and said that he was afraid because he knew his master to be a harsh man. God condemned him because he did not use the opportunity that was there. Just another example. It exemplifies to us that this spirit of fear that makes excuses and says, "I better not try this for failure," and then does nothing with the opportunity that we have, will cause and bring about our condemnation. How do we overcome it? I want to suggest to you just a few keys in overcoming the spirit of fear, the spirit of inferiority. The first one I want you to consider with me is the power of prayer. When we feel that feeling of fear, when we're worried about what's going to happen, young people, when you're faced with a situation where you're going to have to make a decision between God and some other a responsibility, maybe it is some sports team that you're on, or maybe it is some responsibility at school, whether it's a team commitment or a committee or a group or a friendship or a study group at school, and you're worried, what's going to happen? What will my professor do if I explain to him that I have this commitment first? What is my coach going to do if I explain to him I have this commitment first? The first thing that you need to do is fall down on your knees in prayer. Go to God. Make known to Him your concerns and what faces you. And I want you to notice with me in the book of Nehemiah in chapter 4 that we have such a great example of a man of prayer. And I believe that this exemplifies the spirit of power in the midst of humility and why Nehemiah was able to accomplish so much in his life spiritually. In Nehemiah chapter 4, we see in verses 1 and 2 that Sanballat and Tobiah were intimidating the people, and the people were afraid. Then in verse 3, Tobiah the Ammonite was beside him and said, "Whatever they build, even if a fox goes up on it, he will break down their stone wall." In verse 4, Nehemiah prayed and said, "Hear, O our God, for we are despised." Remember, that word means to be looked down upon, to think little of. He says, "We are despised. Turn their reproach on their own heads. Give them as plunder to a land of captivity. Do not cover their iniquity. Do not let their sin be blotted out from before you, for they have provoked you to anger before the builders." Now look at verse 6. "So we built the wall, and the entire wall, wall was joined together up to half its height, for the people had a mind to work." There was a willingness to take courage and to do something. But it began with prayer. Nehemiah and this ragtag group of builders, they found a way to do it. One carried a sword while the other one carried a trowel. But Nehemiah began with prayer. You will not overcome this world if you do not develop a genuine prayer life. As a young person, if you don't know how to pray, pray with someone. Read the Psalms, hear the prayers of David, and develop your prayer life. But you know, saying, "I don't know how to pray," is essentially saying, "I don't know how to talk to God," and that's like saying, "I don't know how to talk to my parents," or "I don't know how to talk to my girlfriend," or "I don't know how to talk to meet new friends." I want to tell you, the only way to do it is to do it. You've got to start. Just start talking to God. Pour out your heart to Him genuinely. Don't worry about how you word everything. Tell Him what is on your heart. Certainly there is to be a spirit of reverence, of godliness, of fear, of respect. There's no doubt about that. But pour out your heart to Him in love. He cares for you. He wants to hear from you. You don't have to say it perfectly. He wants to know your thoughts. And as you express to Him your fears and at the same time your confidence in Him, He will empower you and the wall will be built in your life, metaphorically. Whatever it is that needs to be accomplished, prayer is going to be that wonderful key. You know, another key that we see along with prayer would be study. In 2 Timothy, I want you to notice in 2 Timothy chapter 2, where the Apostle Paul writes to Timothy and expresses to him the importance of giving his time to the Word of God. And he expressed it in 1 Timothy in chapter 4, give attention to reading, to exhortation, to doctrine, and told himself to give himself entirely to these things. In 2 Timothy chapter 2, he says here in verse 15, "Be diligent to present yourself approved to God, a worker who does not need to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth." Diligence in rightly dividing the word of truth. The King James Version translates it study. Because that's really what it is. If we are diligent in handling aright the Word of Truth, that's going to be an exercise of study. It's going to be more than reading. It's going to be meditation. It's going to be searching and seeking for knowledge. It is going to be meditation. It is going to be prayer. It is going to be reading. It is going to be turning back and forth and finding the parallels, letting the Bible speak to us by holding fast the pattern of sound words. And what he tells us here is that as we study, that we will find ourselves through that approved of God. You know, when we are seeking to be pleasing to God, when we're seeking to do His will, someone made the comment in our young men's devotional yesterday that as much as our desire is to go to heaven, we ought to simply desire to please God, to be right with Him. And as we seek that, we will gain confidence as we study the Bible. Because what we will do is we will see where we need to make correction. We'll make that correction. We'll have more confidence. And we will see where we are right. And we will have more confidence. Why is it that we can preach a sermon that makes one person feel encouraged and another person angry? It is the attitude of heart. The person who is seeking to know the truth, regardless of what it costs them, is encouraged. The person who is seeking to do what is right is built up and made confident. The person who doesn't want to simply is made to feel guilty. And as we see with Cain, instead of responding in the right way to that, they become angry. As we study, we will be approved of God. And I want to tell you that there is no other approval in this world that can do more to empower you and to give you a sound mind of confidence than the approval of God. I still want my parents' approval. It does wonders for me because I respect them and hold them highly in my estimation of godly people. And this is something that all children need, is their parents' approval. Fathers and mothers, let's always remember that. I'm not saying that we lie to them or give them a false sense of ability, but we need to tell them when they're good. We need to find those things that we can approve of in them, because there are going to be plenty of times that we need to make correction too. But why, as valuable as parents' approval is, where we fail is very early in our life, we get caught up in this trap of seeking the approval of our peers, of seeking the approval of other people, and being afraid of losing that. And in our men's devotional yesterday, we talked about King Saul and the mistake that he made, and that was it. It was that craving for the approval of the people. He didn't want to lose his position. And if he would have just sought the approval of God, God would have provided it. You know, look with me at what God said to Joshua here in the first part of this book. God told Joshua, and think about the daunting task that was before him. God said to Joshua, "Moses, my servant, is dead," in verse 2 of chapter 1. "Now therefore arise, go over to this Jordan, you and all this people, to the land which I am giving to them, the children of Israel." I can't imagine hearing that from God. "I'm to take over from Moses? Who can fill his shoes?" God told him in verse 6, "Be strong and of good courage." Verse 5, "No man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not leave you nor forsake you." And you know, I can understand, I can imagine that Joshua could hear that, and intellectually he knows that's true because I can read the same thing in Hebrews 13. But do I believe it? Is it real to me? In other words, do I live like I believe it? God said, "I promise you, I will be with you like I was with Moses." Now in the minds of many, they would say, I know, I understand, but I'm not Moses. And I can't do what Moses did. And I'm just not as good as he is with this. And I can't do that over here. And there's no way that the people are going to think as much of me as they did of Moses. I mean, look at all the years he had to lead them. And look at what he accomplished. But notice with me in Joshua chapter 4. In Joshua chapter 4, the Bible tells us here in verse 13, about 40,000 people prepared for war crossed over before the Lord for battle to the plains of Jericho. On that day, the Lord exalted Joshua in the sight of all Israel, and they feared him as they feared Moses all the days of his life. Almost immediately, Joshua had to make some decisions. He had to do some things to show God he believed him. But at that point, God worked providentially, and he gave Joshua the approval, the respect, the fear, and the following of the people that he needed to lead them. What God was saying is, Joshua, you let me take care of what's out of your control. What's in your control is follow me, and I'll make sure the people follow you. I'll make sure that you have what you need to lead if you do what I call upon you to do. Young people, God will make you as popular as you need to be. And if you don't have that popularity, then it is not needed at this point in your life, and don't seek it. You seek the approval of God, and as you have the approval of God, it will give you that empowerment and that confidence. It will give you that spirit of being bulletproof in this world. What can man do to me? And peer pressure loses all of its power. And you have at once taken most of the weapons out of Satan's hands to use against you in your youth. Seek the approval of God. It comes through prayer and study and obedience. Another thing that we need to understand is we've got to apply ourselves. In 1 Timothy in chapter 4, as I alluded to earlier, Paul said to Timothy there in verse 12 and verse 13, let no one despise your youth. In other words, don't allow people the opportunity or give them a reason to look down upon you as being just a young person, as being foolish. He says, but be an example to the believers in word, in conduct, in love, in spirit, in faith, in purity. Till I come, give attention to reading, to exhortation, to doctrine. Verse 15, meditate on these things, give yourself entirely to them, that your progress may be evident to all. God says, you apply yourself, and I'll supply. You apply, I supply. He'll provide it. The question is, do you believe it? Again, you've got to make this real. You can read about it. It can be a Bible story. It can be a story from your children's classes. You can even sing a song about it. But when you do it, and when God comes through in your life and He shows you that He can make you who you need to be, confident in yourself, sometimes even standing alone, but knowing that you're right with God, that He loves you and approves of you. Whether you are a godly housewife that no one exalts as being important in the world, but you're raising your kids and doing what you can where you are, it may be God that is the only one that you feel approval from. As a young lady who chooses to dress modestly and to live different from the rest of the world, and you know that all the girls around you are going to use every advantage that they have to get the attention of the boys, and you know that you could do that, but it wouldn't be right. God will help you find the young man that is best for you when you trust God, submit to Him, follow Him, and do His will. Young men, the same is true of you. It is not in your power. It's not going to be in your athletic feet. It's not going to be in your ability to be a player or play the game or to be a flirt to find the girl that you need. The power is in God to work providentially and to answer your prayers. And your responsibility is to be the godly young man that you can be and should be. Don't be afraid. Trust in God. Apply yourself. Look with me in 2 Peter. We did a series of studies from this text in 2 Peter in chapter 1. I want you to notice here with me that he says in verse 5, but also for this very reason, giving all diligence, add to your faith virtue, to virtue knowledge, to knowledge self-control, to self-control perseverance, to perseverance godliness, to godliness brotherly kindness, and to brotherly kindness love. For if these things are yours and abound, you will be neither barren nor unfruitful in the knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ. Verse 10, therefore, brethren, be even more diligent to make your call and election sure. For if you do these things, you will never stumble. Apply yourself. You add what you can, and then God will supply what you can't. Apply yourself. I want you to notice also that we have got to have the proper thinking. And we fail in this when we're young. We fail in this when we're older. You know, he said, the spirit of power and of love and of a sound mind. Think right about ourselves and about others. Listen to what Paul wrote here in Romans chapter 12. In Romans chapter 12, the apostle Paul writes about this proper estimation. He says in Romans chapter 12 and in verse 3, "For I say through the grace given to me to everyone who is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly, as God has dealt to each one a measure of faith." He didn't say have a spirit of inadequacy. He didn't say to have a spirit of fear. He just said think soberly. That is, soundly, properly, seriously, examining yourself. And quit comparing yourself to others. This is one of the greatest mistakes that you can make. This is not... Joshua did not fail in comparing himself to Moses. Joshua made himself the best person that Joshua could be. And he trusted that there was a reason that God gave him that opportunity. And he understood that God gave him that opportunity because he was the man for the hour. And when an opportunity to study with a friend, when an opportunity to take a stand for what is true and what is right, even though it feels like you're going to be alone and no one else is going to do what's right, when that opportunity is there, God is saying, you are the man or the young lady for the hour. You can do this, and that's why I've given you the opportunity. But if you begin to compare yourself with others and say, oh, so-and-so could do this, or he could do this, or she could, but I can't. I can't talk to them. I don't know enough. I can't study with them. In 2 Corinthians chapter 10 and in verse 12, the Apostle Paul writes about this failure and he says, "We dare not class ourselves or compare ourselves with those who commend themselves, but they, measuring themselves by themselves and comparing themselves among themselves, are not wise." Constantly comparing ourselves to others is going to result in one of two things. Either a spirit of inferiority or false confidence. When we compare ourselves to others to build ourselves up, we can always find someone worse than us. And we have false confidence. We compare ourselves to Jesus Christ as far as that standard goes. When we compare ourselves to others to try to make an excuse or to find a reason, to find an out for why I shouldn't do this, we can always find people that are better at something than we are. It will never help us. Let me say this to you too. If you don't value wealth, if you don't value physical beauty, then you're not going to feel inferior about those things. And those are two of the things that challenge us in our youth so many times, is the material things that someone else has. The car, the house, the money, the clothes, or the physical beauty that a person might have. And we begin to pick ourselves apart. That has nothing to do with the person that you are in here. It's interesting that we read very little about the great men and women of God. We read very little about their physical appearance. When we do read about physical appearance, many times, not in every case, certainly there were godly people that were physically beautiful, but we find men like Absalom that certainly put too much confidence in his ability to charm other people with that physical attractiveness. That's not always a powerful thing that works to our advantage. When we quit valuing those things, then when we see other people that may have more than us in those realms, it won't affect us because that doesn't matter in the kingdom of God. Put your value in the proper things. Realize who your Father is. 1 John 3 and verse 1. We read this passage yesterday in 1 John chapter 3 and in verse 1 where he says, "Behold what manner of love the Father has bestowed on us that we should be called the children of God." That needs to mean something to you. God is your Father. Who can be against you? Realize that the power to do great things is in God and not in us. He doesn't need our greatness. He just needs our willingness to be His conducting rod. Because that's really all that we are. Paul said, "I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase." And in the end, I don't care what we accomplish in this life or in His kingdom, we are merely a conducting rod of God's power. And what that means is all that I've got to do is supply myself. I've got to make myself available for God's power to work through me. I need to be the best person that I can possibly be. George Bernard Shaw, do not necessarily admire the man. He had many foibles and things that I would not respect, but he did say something that was profound late in his life. Nearing his death, there was a reporter that interviewed him and wanted to play the what if game with him. He said, "Mr. Shaw, you have been in the company of royalty, of some of the greatest stars and most popular people in the world, some of the wealthiest and most powerful. If you had your life to live all over again, who would you want to be?" George Bernard Shaw said, "I would want to be the man that George Bernard Shaw could have been." When you stand in that day of judgment, you're going to be held accountable not for what other people can do, what other people should do, but for who you could have been. But you've got to make that choice. We have got to let go of all of the limitations that we put on ourselves. And so many times we put unnecessary limitations. We see barriers where they're not. You know, if we would let go of those, if we would quit fighting against ourselves and say, "Well, I don't think they would ever listen to the gospel. And well, look at what they're doing over here. And I don't think that person would ever listen to me." We are putting barriers there, and there is untold potential beyond that. One of the best stories I ever heard about this tapping into potential, if we don't know that there are barriers there, a fella, an older grandpa, was talking to his grandkids and trying to impress upon them that things are not always as they appear. And so the grandpa said to his grandchildren, "When I was your age," of course you know it's going to be a good story when grandpa says, "When I was your age." He said, "When I was your age, my daddy had a beautiful big vegetable garden. And we sold the vegetables at a roadside stand that we had built." He said, "My mom and my dad, they always bought their chickens from Willie. And this year they had purchased chickens from Willie, and when he delivered them, we were at the vegetable stand working. And so Willie left the chickens in a crate on the front porch. And when we returned home, we found that all the chickens had escaped from the crate and they were running all over the yard. And we spent the rest of the afternoon and evening chasing chickens and putting them back up in the crate." He said, "My dad was really irritated. So he called Willie up and he said, 'Willie, I don't appreciate that you deliver those chickens and leave them unattended in a crate on the front porch.' He said, 'We spent all evening gathering up chickens. We chased them all over the neighborhood. And so far we've only found 11. And Willie said, 11 chickens? Wow, that's pretty good. I only delivered 6. Sometimes if we don't know our limitations, we can do more than what anybody could imagine. And we place those limitations on ourselves. God doesn't put them there. Believe in yourself because of God. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." Thank you so much for your attention this hour. We will pass to our classes at this time.